We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Stan, jobs and the economy are probably the top issue for most Rhode Islanders. So what are your ideas for improving jobs and the economic climate in Rhode Island? And how are your ideas different from Congressman Cicilline?
We don't have people here with the skills to attract businesses. In our education system, in high school, we try to get our kids to go to college. And the fact of the matter is that in this state, most kids who go to college drop out in the first year and don't come back. So they're saddled with debt, they don't have any skills, and they don't have any other option. And so we have to admit that we're failing these students, and we need to put vocational training back in high school to give these students an option for an alternative other than college if they choose not to go to college.
You're a first-time candidate, so how do you respond to the question of why would you be able to do a better job in Congress rather than someone with more experience like Congressman Cicilline?
I think the approach is important in this case. If you are just going to attack the other side, in a place like Congress today where it's more polarized than ever, that approach isn't going to work. That approach hasn't worked for the last 4 years, and we don't expect it to work for the next 2 years. It takes original ideas to build consensus between the Democrats and Republicans, and I think you'll find that my ideas are ideas that people aren't talking about and ideas that have the potential to build the consensus to make things happen.
Let's go to Scott.
The U.S. Senate passed an immigration reform measure that both beefs up Border Patrol and provides a path to citizenship. The U.S. House, led by your party, the Republicans, didn't want anything to do with it. What is your idea for immigration reform?
I think in terms of the influx of people coming in from Central and South America.
No, wait a minute. The Senate bill. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I support that.
You're one of two Republicans running in the first congressional district. The other is Cor McLynch. He seems to have a more conservative political profile than you. What is your strategy for winning this primary that in which you face Cor McLynch?
We're both first-time candidates with low name recognition, so I'm just going out there, putting myself in front of Stop and Shop, being out there for 6 hours, wearing a suit in the heat, and people appreciate that. And I try to talk to shoppers, and most of them have no interest in talking to me, but some do. And I think being out there, you gain visibility.
Can you give us three or four votes cast by Congressman Cicilline that you disagree with where you would have been on the other side of his vote?
I don't know his voting record off the top of my head.
You haven't studied his voting record and you're running against him?
I mean, I'm familiar with his votes. I don't have an answer to that off the top of my head.
Most Republicans in Congress are very opposed to Obamacare. So would you side with Republicans in Congress on that issue if elected?
So it means a couple of things to be opposed to Obamacare. Do you want to repeal Obamacare and go back to the way it was before Obamacare? Or do you want to make things better for people? If it's to go back to the way it was 3, 4, or 5 years ago, that doesn't solve anything for anybody. And so I wouldn't be for that. If we have ideas to make things better, that's where I come in and that's what I want to do.
You've talked a lot about the costs of our healthcare system and the fact that we don't have as good outcomes as other countries. I'm looking north to our friends in Canada who have a single-payer system, and yet they do it with much better efficiency and cost control than we have in this country. Would you support a single-payer system?
No, because I don't think it's feasible in this country. The reason why Canada can do it but we can't is because they don't have the same special interest and lobby and the money that's involved in politics that we do. The healthcare lobby is the largest lobby in D.C. They give half a billion dollars every year, most of that as direct contributions to incumbents. And so they get to write the laws to their liking. With that kind of influence, you can't pass something like a single-payer system and expect it to be affordable.
Well, then what can we do?
So you have to stand to special interests first. And it takes leadership, someone who understands how healthcare is delivered and see how patients are suffering because of this. So, for example, with what we saw in Phoenix with the VA system, I mean, that attracted a lot of attention because the case was clear that patients are suffering because of the long wait list or whatever the systemic issues are. And if we can make that clear, if I can make that clear to people, I think I can attract enough attention to make things better.
You talk about standing up to special interests. If you were elected to Congress, how would you stand up to your fellow Republicans?
So as to point out that the people who are taking money from the industry, that money influences their vote and they're voting against what's in the best interest of people.
Do you own a car? And if not, how are you campaigning outside of Providence?
So I just bought a car for the campaign. I spent less than $2,000 for it, but it gets me around. So, yes, I do have a car, and it's getting me around the state.
One of the things that's interesting is not very many young people, particularly in New England, are becoming Republicans. Why do you think it is that there's not one Republican U.S. House member from any of the 6 New England states?
That's a good question. I can speak as a college student and being, you know, in a liberal college campus. The Republican hatred is very strong, and I experience this on a daily basis.
At Brown?
At Brown, any college campus. I think young people lean liberal, and the Republicans have done some bad stuff, and they've been portrayed in the media for that, and so they get a lot of flack for what they've done. And then I mean, I agree to a degree with the sentiment, which is why I want to change the direction of the party. I want them to have more positive ideas on how to make things better, not just to stand up and stop what other people are doing.
Be the party of no, in other words.
Right.
We're talking here with 1st District Republican congressional candidate Stan Tran. And Stan, one of the challenges you face in this campaign is raising money. What do you think should be done to reduce the influence of money in politics?
I would like to see so that corporations can't donate to politics at all. I don't think that's realistic, but that's something I'm very strongly in favor of.
So you'd vote for a constitutional amendment, say, to get rid of Citizens United?
Yes.
The Supreme Court has ruled that this is basically a free speech issue.
I just don't see it that way. Money is money and speech is speech. You can say what you want, but money is not speech.
How about on the issue of disclosure? What do you think we could do so the public would more readily be able to put their arms around just who is giving to some of these shadowy groups and some of these political action committees?
So I think super PACs should have to disclose all their donors.
Mm-hmm.
As a candidate now, if you get money from an individual or business, you have to disclose that if they give money directly to you. And I guess right now it's up to the media and up to the other opponents, your opponents, to point out if you're receiving money from some shady businesses.
If you don't win this race, what are your plans for the future, and will you run for another political office in the future?
So if I don't win this race, I'm going back to medical school, finishing my education, finishing residency, and starting a practice. I think being a physician is a career, and I don't think politics is. Will I run for office again? Perhaps that's something I would consider after I finish all my training. It just so happens that this is a good time for me to do it, and I'm afraid that once I have a practice and once I have a mortgage to pay and kids to feed and like a nice salary, it'll be hard to put that aside and run for office again.
Howard Dean did it.
Yeah, there are people who do it. It's difficult, not impossible.
Do you expect to stay in Rhode Island, or do you think you would, if you were to start a practice, do you think it would be in your native California?
So I'm interested in family medicine, and Brown has a great family medicine program here, and I plan on staying here, doing my training and practicing here.
On tax reform, what ways would you push tax reform in this country? I know that there's both problems at the corporate level and at the individual level.
So I think our tax code has become more and more complicated. And that's because loopholes are written into the tax code and they're not taken away. And these loopholes benefit small groups of people. And today, I mean, for the average person to have to hire help to prepare their taxes, that's just crazy. I mean, that's $60 a year that you're paying that you shouldn't have to be paying. In a way, it's a tax on everyday people. These loopholes aren't benefiting. They're benefiting you, the common person, to some degree, but they're really benefiting these corporations who are hiring armies of lawyers to navigate the tax code, and that just needs to stop.
Your parents came to the U.S. from Vietnam, so you have a close view on the issue of immigration. What do you think should be done about this issue of Latin American children who are coming across the U.S. border?
I think immigration is great for this country. This country is built on immigrants, but there's a difference between legal immigrants and illegal immigrants. The root cause of this illegal immigration influx from Central and South America is our policy on our war on drugs. We're underwriting the violence because the gangs are fighting over turf in Central America because that's where the cocaine is traveling through from South America. And so we have to realize that we are a part of this problem also, not just to stop build the borders. Yes, we need to address that. But the long-term solution here is to address the drug policy. So I think if we legalize marijuana is a gateway drug because you buy it from a dealer and the dealer also sells other drugs. And so if you can buy marijuana from a grocery store, that takes away a lot of the businesses that goes to drug dealers. And I think it will decrease the use of harder drugs in this country, decrease the flow of money to Mexico, to Central and South America, and slow down the violence in these areas.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And Republican 1st Congressional District candidate Stan Tran.
Thank you so much.